Coming up on Tech News Today, Samsung gets curvaceous, Apple gets a date, and Windows is coming to iOS and Android, kind of. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, October 9th, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, and other Apple products are worth at gazelle.com. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we try to keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world and wrap them in a loving embrace of context, starting with the news views. Dear rest of the world, you're getting your iPhones soon.
Yay.
35 countries will get the iPhone 5S and 5C on October 25th. Among those 35 countries are Liechtenstein, Malta, Reunion Island, and French West Indies. Then, November 5th, 16 more countries get the two phones, including Colombia, Guam, and Moldova. Check Apple.com to see if your country is included.
Reunion Island beat Guam.
Yeah, I know, huh?
As promised, Samsung has launched a handset with a curved display screen. It's called the Galaxy Round, has a 5.7-inch display, and is designed to help consumers use some of the features on the phone, like checking the date or time or missed calls when the home screen is off, more easily. However, the Round will initially only be launched in South Korea, and at this point, there's no information on global launch plans.
According to All Things D sources, Apple will hold an iPad event on October 22nd. Both the iPad and iPad Mini are expected to be refreshed. The iPad with a design more like the Mini, and the Mini might even get a Retina display. All Things D says the event will also show off the new Mac Pro and the next version of OS X, Mavericks.
Smartphones of the world, beware. Firefox OS is expanding. More countries will get the phone, although Mozilla is not saying which ones. Mozilla also said it's coming to new phones, but it won't name those either. They will all get the new Firefox OS 1.1, which Mozilla will admit comes with better app load times, smooth scrolling, new language support, MMS, push notifications, and more. When is all this coming? Soon, is all they'll say.
Sources tell Reuters that Russian authorities have arrested a man known in hacking circles as Paunch, who's believed to be responsible for distributing the software kit known as Black Hole that's widely used by cyber criminals to infect PCs. Black Hole is a piece of malicious software that hackers install on web servers and then automatically infect PCs when users visit a tainted site. A former Russian police detective in contact with Russia's federal government passed along the information about the arrest.
Last year, AMD purchased a startup called C-Micro that built servers, which confused some people. Well, it looks like that was a good investment because C-Micro servers will be powering Verizon's cloud computing services. C-Micro servers will also be behind Japanese telecom NTT Docomo and data centers around the world. Those servers still use ordinary server chips, but C-Micro's server fabric technology lets the chips communicate more effectively. The next servers out of the two companies will be built around ARM chips.
Now, follow me on this one. MEMS stands for Microelectromechanical Systems. Digital Optics has made a MEMS multifocus camera, which can do high-speed focusing, which a lot of people compare to Lytro in a mobile device. Everybody has expected the first MEMS camera to come in the forthcoming Google/LG Nexus 5, but they were all wrong. Digital Optics announced that Chinese smartphone maker Oppo will be the exclusive launch partner for the MEMS camera. Okay, we're done.
Microsoft has announced it's paying well-known hacking expert James Forshaw. He heads up the vulnerability research at London-based security consulting firm Context Information Security, a $100,000-plus bounty for identifying a new exploitation technique in Windows. The information will allow Microsoft to develop defenses against a whole class of future attacks. Microsoft has also released an update to Internet Explorer, which fixes a bug that made IE users vulnerable to remote attacks.
Comcast and Twitter have announced in partnership to add a See It button to Twitter posts about Comcast's NBC Universal shows. When clicked, the button will let Comcast cable subscribers change channels to watch the show or schedule it to be recorded to their Comcast DVR. The Voice will be one of the first shows to be part of the system. Comcast hopes to offer the service for non-Comcast networks and cable systems sometime in the future.
Disney Research in Pittsburgh says it's figured out a way for you to be able to feel textures through a touchscreen. The technology uses modulated voltage that simulates friction to your fingers. That friction is translated in your brain as the actual texture. Disney will present all of its findings in a symposium in Scotland this week.
This episode of Tech News Today wants to make you money. We're not going to turn you into money. We actually want to take your devices and have you get money for them because of our sponsor, Gazelle. The new iPhone is here, and there's probably a new iPad coming up. And you've got old gadgets that you want to get rid of. Gazelle is the easiest way you're going to find to turn those gadgets into cash. Go to gazelle.com. That's G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Find your item. Tell Gazelle the condition. They'll even buy broken iPhones and iPads. Get a risk-free offer for your gadgets and free shipping. Then you can wait 30 days if you want while you figure out that new gadget. And as soon as you send it to them, you'll get paid fast by check, PayPal, or an extra 5% if you choose an Amazon gift card. What's your iPhone worth? What's your iPad 3 worth? What's your Samsung Galaxy S worth? Go to gazelle.com. Find out. They'll even wipe your data for free. Offers are good for 30 days. Do it now, because your iPhone may lose value the longer you wait. Take a minute, go to gazelle.com to find out. Gazelle.com, we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now to discuss the stories of the day, Mr. Jeff Bacalar, editor of Games and Gear and host of the 404 show on CNET.com. Welcome back, Jeff.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us, man. It's good to have you. We've got some Apple news. We've got some Microsoft news. But Ayaz, let's kick it off with that curvaceous Samsung phone.
Yeah, the Galaxy Round. It's got a curved 5.7-inch OLED display, 1080p resolution. The curve's on the vertical axis, so it's kind of it fits your hand a little bit better. What does this round form factor do? If you place the phone flat on a table, obviously it doesn't sit flat. If you tip the edge, it'll actually show you information like on your lock screen. You would see how many missed calls you've had, how many emails you have. Samsung claims that switching between home screens will feel like one continuous transition. And here's that video of you'll be able to see the actual roll function. So if you tip the edge, there you go. We'll see the phone turn on, even though it was on an off state. You get that little information there. Samsung claims that the home screens are going to feel like one continuous transition. It has worked on new tilt and tap-based interactions for music, whatever that means. For specs, if you're wondering what this thing actually can do, 7.9 millimeters thick, 13 megapixel camera, 3 gigabytes of RAM, 2.3 gigahertz quad-core processor, and Android 4.3. It's going to be released today on SK Telecom in South Korea. It's going to cost about $1,000 US, and it comes in luxury brown. Lovely color. I like brown. With more colors coming soon. Jeff, what's your impressions of the round? Did you think these curved phones are going to be a trend?
My first obvious knee-jerk reaction is, well, I don't need this. And that's okay. I kind of do like the form factor. To me, that's kind of cool. But I'm nervous because I love popping my phone on the dashboard of my car. Mm. And this isn't going to work. If it's going to be, you know, bobbling back and forth, I'm going to have to flip it over. You know, I don't want every, you know, time I turn, like the weather to come up on my phone. So that's my selfish analysis of the round.
On the other hand, Jeff, I don't know if you, like me, have a round leg, but when you put this in your pocket, it could just wrap right around your leg instead of being that flat thing like I've got now.
That means you can put it in your pocket wrong because it can be sticking out.
I'm into that. I don't know how comfortable I am about my phone hugging my leg. But nevertheless, you're right. In terms of like, you know, skinny jeans people, they're going to dig this for sure.
It's much better for skinny jeans people.
You know, I never really thought about the idea that if a phone is slightly curved and you kind of tap it, you can get information like date and time and that sort of thing like we saw in the video. But now that I have my phone sitting in front of me that obviously doesn't do that, I'm like, that would be kind of cool, actually. I mean, that's something that I actually do several times per day. I mean, my phone is my watch and it's always pretty near me. It's usually sitting on a table in front of me. And I guess it's not that hard to, you know, tap my home button on my iPhone. But I think that that's actually a neat touch. It's something that is very cool. And in my wildest imagination, I probably never would have come up with that as a feature. because it's just so obvious.
It looks like it takes a while for the video to come up, though. And to me, that's, I'm not into that. Obviously, this is all like Samsung stuff built on top of Android, right? And I have an S3, and it seems very bogged down by, what is it? Is it called TouchWiz? Is that TouchWiz, what it's called?
Yep.
Yeah, I don't like that. I want, you know, I think, you know, the stock stuff, that's what I'm into. And you saw that video. There's a solid 2 seconds. Time is money, man. I can't be, you know, sitting there waiting for stuff to show up from that slow tilt. Come on.
Well, obviously, it's a leisurely motion, Jeff. I mean, it's not like you're going to be sitting there like frantically doing that. Keith512 saying cats would love this if you want to play with the phone. I just don't see this kind of curved glass thing coming to Samsung's bigger lines like the S3, the S4, and so on. The round seems like it's going to be its own niche. Samsung makes every form factor, every size. So I guess they just figured out another way to come up with another variant of their phone. Because effectively, this is the Note with a curve. So I'm not really sure what makes it spectacularly different other than curved OLED.
Well, and I could create a phone, one would think, where I just touch it and it comes on and gives me the time and date. And it knows because of the accelerometer whether it's lying still and flat versus being in my pocket. So it's not just coming on all the time. Presumably, there's something like that to keep it from when you're just jostling it around in a bag or something. It doesn't constantly turn itself on.
The LG G2, if you double tap the screen, it actually turns on the screen and does just that.
So, I mean, this really is just a form factor gimmick. I almost don't want to use the word gimmick because for some people that'll be cool. They're like, yeah, I want a round phone. That's just nice. That's cool. It looks nice. I like it. Whatever. You know, it's a matter of taste. But yeah, functionally, I don't think that's such a big deal.
It could be Samsung just tipping its cards a little bit saying, yeah, we can do the curved display. We're going to do that with the next Gear Watch. I mean, the one that's out right now is not exactly there, but the next one could have that curve that fits your wrist a lot better.
Yeah. The brown round, but luxury brown. Okay, Apple has not said anything official, but All Things D's usually pretty good at predicting these things, and they say their sources are telling them October 22nd, a Tuesday, will be the next Apple announcement. All Things D very nicely pointed out that currenteditorials.com had this date as the announcement way back on September 11th, and most of the other information between the two sources match up. We'll get a new iPad, we'll get the Mac Pro release date, the one that they showed off at WWDC, and we'll get OS X Mavericks. All Things D says their sources say the iPad will get a thinner design like the Mini, an improved camera, and the 64-bit A7 processor that's in the iPhone 5S. The Mini will get a Retina display, and All Things D says an A7 processor. Current editorials back in September said it was an A6 processor, so there's a little discrepancy there. No idea whether they get Touch ID or not. And John Pashofsky notes that the announcement would be the same day as Nokia's innovation reinvented showcase and the retail debut of the Microsoft Surface 2. Now, we might also get, current editorial says anyway, Mac Mini, MacBook Pro. Sometimes that happens with an OS X announcement. So if we get Mavericks, that wouldn't be too surprising. Jeff, if you had to make a guess, how likely you think it is we get an October 22nd announcement? And what do you think we would hear if we do?
You're talking about for Mavericks?
For anything. For the Apple announcement, what do you think is going to happen?
You know, for me, I'm really curious about the Touch ID stuff because I think it'll be very telling whether or not they are having trouble manufacturing that. I've read a bunch of stuff that's like a big hurdle in terms of, you know, yielding a large amount of products. So for me, you kind of got to, I mean, kind of would really, really be upset if it's not. Like, that's kind of a deal breaker for me. Having seen that work in person on the 5S, it's the only really thing I've been excited about in an Apple product in a very long time. So, you know, if it's not in the next iPad, I will be bummed out. And I think a lot of people will not see that, you know, need to upgrade over the 4. I mean, at least they're not doing what they did when they went from the 3 to 4. And there was like that 8-month period where everyone was just, myself included, who got a 3 and just felt like I was thrown under the bus. At least it's been a year this time. But for me and for people who are looking to upgrade for an iPad, I'm not sure popping in that new 64-bit A7 chip is really worth, you know, plunking down on an upgrade. Maybe that's just me, but I'm curious to hear what you guys think.
Well, I mean, I feel like and Jeff, I've got the same issue as you, where I've got the third gen iPad, and ever since I installed iOS 7, it's a little laggy. So yeah. I love the idea of just the whole experience being smoother. I also love the idea of getting a Retina display on the Mini, which is something that is just has always been lacking, and that's why I don't really reach for the Mini all the time. But Touch ID, now that I have it on my iPhone, I mean, I just wake up my phone from sleep just for fun, because it's just fun now, where I'm like, hey, look at this. Look at me. Yep. Didn't have to enter anything. And, you know, same thing for app purchases. It's so pleasant. It's like, if they keep that off of the iPad, it will merely drive me to do more things off of the iPad and on my iPhone, because it's just sort of the way of the future.
I'm very interested in what the Mini is going to be, more so than the actual, the iPad 5, because we've seen what that's supposed to look like. The design looks a lot like the iPad Mini, with the bezel on the sides being a little thinner. And I actually bought an iPad 3 around the same time it came out, and immediately sold it when we were doing the Apple special, when the iPad 4 came out. I already gazelled this just now while we're talking about Samsung, because I'm ready to get rid of my 4. But I don't know if I'm going to get the Mini or not. The Mini with the Retina display looks like it'd be very, very usable. I'm still amazed at how Apple has these deals with Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, other carriers, where you can have like really cheap data plans. I have never seen a plan like that anywhere else, where you can get this kind of data for that low cost. And that might actually get me to, you know, trade in my giant iPad for one of the Mini ones.
You know what I'm surprised about? I'm surprised that they've been able to convince an entire generation of consumers that it's okay to release something that doesn't work after a year and a half after you've had it. Like Sarah said, that iOS 7 update on a 3 is just not very enjoyable at all. I get it with the cell phone thing. You're only spending $200, $300 every 2 years, but this is a very expensive toy that now I feel like I need to replace every year and a half to 2 years. Not cool. I'm not very happy about that.
Now, see, I have the iPad 2, and I have iOS 7 on it, and it's running just fine.
How is that?
I don't know.
You think it's the Retina?
I don't know.
It could be, because iPad 2 does not have Retina. It's lower lower resolution, so it could be that, trying to push all those graphics around.
Yeah.
But on the fourth generation iPad, it runs just fine. So that's supposed to have a different processor, right?
Interesting.
I've never been so jacked by a product. It's the gift that keeps on punching you in the pants.
Well, how about this? You'll be able to run Windows on your iOS and Android devices soon, according to Microsoft. That's sort of misleading. What's the real story, Sarah?
Well, okay, there are a couple little stories here, but they're related, and it's good news for iOS users, among other people. Microsoft has announced that Windows Server 2012 R2 will release remote desktop app, so it'll be available not just on Windows and Windows RT, but OS X, iOS, and Android later this month. The OS X app has apparently gotten a big overhaul, and the iOS version will support both iOS 6 and 7. The Android version will support everything from Gingerbread and up. So that's kind of it's okay. That sounds good. Remote desktop, people like that. Also, the bigger question is, when is Office coming to the iPad? This is something that's available on the iPhone right now, although it's extremely limited. It only works in conjunction with an Office 365 subscription, a premium one, which starts at $100 per year. And the whole thing is, it's a little silly, because in something like Office, you feel like, well, the iPad just makes more sense than the iPhone because you've got more space to work on a document or a spreadsheet or that sort of thing. Office for Android phones is no better. So there's no real reason to think that Microsoft is just going to give iPad people a break. However, we at least know that everyone at Microsoft is saying it will happen. There was an event in Florida that was sponsored by Gartner. Steve Ballmer was speaking at, and he said, iPad will be picked up when there's a touch-first user interface. So that's pretty much after the modern Office apps that are in development get released, and one would assume, because why would they do it any other way, that it would be something like they'd come to the Surface first and then iPad sometime after that. We don't exactly know when those will be released. We heard earlier this year that it was looking towards fall, but here we are in fall and we don't have any release date. Jeff, I mean, Office for iPad sounds like it's inevitable, but is it going to be something that, you know, people want if we're stuck with one of those subscription models that we currently have on the iPhone?
That's a great point. I personally don't know anyone that still uses Office. I don't know about you guys. There's a lot of free stuff that has been sort of in the marketplace for a while that I've gotten very used to, and I'm sure a lot of people have as well. In fact, pretty much our entire office works on something that's not Office. But nevertheless, yeah, I mean, if there is that sort of, you know, group of people who are clamoring for it, yeah, it's coming. But still, it still seems kind of murky as to, you know, how exactly it's going to be a seamless experience. For me, it's just like, you know, I don't know. I have never been that productive on an iPad when it comes to that sort of stuff either. So it's tough to be enthusiastic about it, is the way I will diplomatically put it.
Yeah, I am a 365 subscriber, and I have Office on my phone, and I never, ever use it. And the only reason I even use Office for anything still is there are some editors who track changes in Microsoft Word. And so when I work with those people, I pretty much have to use Microsoft Word in order to be able to work with them. But you're right, Jeff. I mean, there's so many good options. I do almost all my other works in Google Docs. I have LibreOffice that I can use to open spreadsheets and things like that. That's not to say that nobody uses Office. Millions of people use Office. So I think an iPad version of this could be popular, but you need a keyboard to really make the best use of it. You can get a keyboard for an iPad, but it doesn't personally get me that excited either.
And Microsoft finally rolling out remote desktop for iOS and Android. There's so many other competitors that kind of do that already. It seems just natural that Microsoft would have that. For Microsoft to wait on having the touch versions of Office apps for Windows first and then translating for iOS, that makes a lot of sense too, because one of the weird things about Windows RT is that there's still a desktop because Office runs in that weird desktop. It's this strange... The only time you have the desktop is because of that. So that'll be good for Microsoft in general. For moving it to the iPad, there are millions and millions of people who use Office. Microsoft makes tons of money. The Office division is incredibly profitable. So yeah, they should have proper support for some of the most popular devices out there, because you know Microsoft might be diversifying by going into hardware, but software is what they do. So if they should be supporting any piece of hardware they can. And if they don't have an Office product, then Google will do something like release what I think it's called Quick Office for free. And these things are good, but you know, when you try to use a Word doc or an Excel doc, they don't format exactly right if they are those proper documents. Microsoft obviously has compatibility with its own products, so they should be out there for these devices.
And the Surface RT starts to make more sense if you have an actual touch interface for Microsoft Office. You don't have to do that wonky desktop version that's almost useless for anything that isn't Office. So I'm looking forward to that for Microsoft at least. Let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, Personal Capital. Here's the catch-22 of your financial life. If you start to become more successful and you start to have more ways of making money and you have maybe you do some investments or even just a little, you've got a 401k and maybe you've got a pension plan, it becomes more complicated to keep track of all that stuff. I bet there's lots of you guys out there who are like, yeah, I know I've got this stuff, but I don't really know what's going on with it. I don't know the logins anymore, et cetera. You got accounts scattered everywhere. How are you supposed to make sure that you're making good decisions with your money if you don't even know where your stuff is? That's where Personal Capital comes in. They'll combine all your financial accounts. You'll have to look up that password one more time, of course. But they'll give you a total real-time snapshot of all your finances. You'll get graphs and charts, reports, a whole story. It's like having GPS for your finances. And right now you can use Personal Capital for free. Go to personalcapital.com/TNT. Just takes a minute to sign up, but it should pay you big dividends by helping make better investment decisions immediately. Your financial life will be even more complicated tomorrow, so don't wait. Sign up now. Absolutely free. PersonalCapital.com/TNT. Get your free Personal Capital account. Smart investing means seeing the big picture. Start today. Visit PersonalCapital.com/TNT. Hey, and we thank Personal Capital for their support of Tech News Today. Disney has an invention that will allow you to feel... Is 3D touchscreen, IS?
It's not really a 3D touchscreen, but you're going to feel whatever's on the screen. So Disney Research in Pittsburgh, which I didn't even know was a thing, has created a way to feel the shape and texture of objects through a touchscreen. Now, the way you perceive textures is through friction. And so what the screen is doing, it's using electrovibration-based display, and they use a modulated voltage, which creates a friction that fools your fingers into thinking you're feeling the textures. In the video, Disney talks about how you could feel ridges. If you have a topographic map, you can get an idea of what's going on because you're going to feel that feedback on your screens there. And the screens could also do real-time rendering. So if you are using a camera or using a or device that has this kind of screen, you'd be able to point it at something, let's say something far away, and be able to kind of feel what it would feel like if it was far away from you. So it seems really like an interesting idea if you want to touch an area you can't reach. The screens also help the visually impaired. You get an idea of their surroundings. And Disney's going to show off their full findings, that is, at a user interface symposium in Scotland this week. Jeff, where do you see this technology being the most useful?
Well, obviously the visually impaired people, I mean, I feel like, just kind of feel like all these gadgets have like left them behind for the most part. This will be totally revolutionary for them. But what I'm honestly kind of interested about, if it does make it to something like a phone, I mean, we're all old enough to remember the days of reaching in your pocket and sort of feeling around for, you know, that 5 button that had the little ridge on it, right? That's something I want to do again, is sort of like feel around and not necessarily have to, you know, break eye contact with someone or, you know, be distracted in some way. If I could feel around on my phone rather than have to look at it, yeah, it's a luxury that I probably, and we all probably don't need, but it really would come in handy. And it's something I kind of miss from like those flip phone days, for sure.
It's a huge accessibility thing, as Jeff mentioned, the ability to feel an interface when you're visually impaired could be a huge boon. I don't think we should underemphasize how important that is. Also, you know, topo maps, you know, and just the idea of having a three-dimensional map gets me excited, because I'm a fan of I'm a maps amateur maps geek, and so the idea of like being able to feel the mountain ranges and see like what the actual elevations are and then feel that with your hands, that just sounds cool. This is great stuff.
Yeah, one of the things that Disney research mentioned is that it could also help you feel 3D rendering. So in the video, they show like a little pot for tea. A kettle, I guess, and you could actually feel the way that's going to be. I think this would be big for shopping, actually, because one of the things you lose, if you have like a 3D display, you can turn something around. That's really neat. But if you can feel that object, I'm thinking Amazon would be all over this. It's like, let's turn this and feel this actual object, kind of like have an actual feel for it. And then you might buy it, more likely to buy something, because you can feel the texture. You want to see if this is like the best shirt for you or whatever it might be. I just think that could be pretty big.
Well, I want to know how specific it gets. You know, it's like you use a shirt as an example. We all know that there's like a certain kind of T-shirt where you're like, I don't know why, it's just so comfortable. I mean, I love this shirt. I want like 30 of them. And then there's like the T-shirts that are, you know, really kind of, I don't know, too stiff and that sort of thing. How much would something like a detail of wood grain come through, you know, via something like this on a touchscreen? I hope it works great. And yeah, if it does, totally the future of online shopping and the like. But I wonder how much different things will feel to the touch.
Yeah, whether it's true to the touch or whether it's just like a simulated effect. I mean, it is simulated, obviously, but is it just like, oh, well, it bumps a little bit when you're going over rough edges, and that's texture, or is it actually replicating the texture of the individual object?
Well, that's the same problem they have with pictures right now. Are you actually seeing the same color on your screen that you would see in the store? It's that same problem they'll have to correct for.
Mm-hmm. And you know someone's going to use it for a game, too. That'll be like the second application for it. Right. Okay.
Actually, that would be perfect, right? Because I hate touchscreen gaming because of the on-screen controls. If you had a little bit of that kind of surface area to tell you, oh, yeah, that's the up, that's the down, that would be awesome.
Yeah, that would work out.
Yeah.
All right. You know you're a successful tech company when everybody says that somebody else is going to be the next you. So PayPal must be feeling very loved, because we have another in a series of stories about how somebody's going to replace PayPal. This time it's Amazon.
That's right. Amazon has launched a service called Pay with Amazon, which sounds just like it's really basically that. They announced it at Money 2020 yesterday, and it lets partner sites enable a little payments button when you're ready to check out, which you're probably already familiar with PayPal buttons, you know, or credit cards at checkout. So a partner could use Amazon API to then say, all right, well, Amazon has a lot of customers. Those customers, for convenience sake, could become our customers. In fact, Tom Taylor, who is vice president over at Amazon Payments, says Amazon has more than 250 million active customer accounts. Login and pay with Amazon enables companies to make millions of our customers their customers by inviting online shoppers with Amazon credentials to access their account information safely and securely with a single login. By the way, if you're wondering if 250 million active customer accounts is a lot, it is, although Apple has 575 million customer credit card accounts on file. So Amazon's probably in second place, but still, they're behind Apple by kind of a lot. The company did introduce login earlier this year that lets you use Amazon credentials to log in anywhere, similar to how something like Facebook Connect works. And they've already partnered with Gogo, which does in-flight Wi-Fi on certain flights. Gogo's already going to be using the retailer's Amazon retailer's payment system for its in-flight Wi-Fi services and will integrate the button later this year. Transaction fees, nothing crazy there. They're 2.9% plus a 30 cent per transaction fee based on volume. So I guess there are some people who just hate PayPal, right? But I'm one of those people who, when I see a PayPal button when I'm ready to check out somewhere, that just means I don't have to enter in anything. So I always go for it. Would I want to use an Amazon button instead of a PayPal button if it pretty much worked the same way? As a customer, I'm not sure I care. But as a retailer, would you want to allow Amazon to have branding anywhere on your experience when Amazon is probably your closest competitor as far as selling stuff? Jeff, what do you think?
That's exactly what I was thinking of. Because at the end of the day, people are, I mean, how many times in your daily life do you hear, well, Amazon's got that cheaper, I'm just going to go there. For sure. If it's any, like, that's the problem. PayPal is a payment service, right? And they're completely, I mean, I know they do credit cards and other sort of like small-time banking stuff. But in terms of Amazon, that's a store. That's like going to, you know, store A and using, like, you know, it's like going to JCPenney's and like using your Macy's credit card to pay for, you know, something there. So I
but
feel
PayPal's
like
PayPal's eBay. I mean, I know PayPal, the branding is the same, but
the branding isn't the same, but the branding has separated them to the point where I feel like people have, you know, you're right. They are the same sort of company, but I think the branding is separate enough where people don't, when I think of PayPal, I mean, you and I, we all know they're the same, but I don't immediately think of like auction sites and stuff like that. I just think, like Sarah said, I feel this relief where it's like, finally I can just, you know, log in with my password, pay, And I'm out the door.
Yeah, but you also don't hear people saying things like eBay is closing the mom and pop bookstores in my town. You know, that's the sort of thing Amazon is always blamed for.
Yeah, but couldn't you just be a merchant who has your own website and then you at the end of the day you have that pay with Amazon, but also be on Amazon because you could be an individual seller or merchant there. So that way you're just kind of you're controlling the way your products are shown, maybe on your own websites, and you don't have to bother with another third party. You could just go with Amazon there, and you could sell your goods on Amazon as an individual seller.
Well, and that goes for some larger sites too, not just the smaller sites. I don't think Target does this anymore, but Target was one of the more famous ones where they were selling through Amazon as well as having their own independent website. So Amazon does partner up with folks for this kind of thing. And that may be the people who are most likely to want to use this, or you're a newer merchant and you just want to have that Amazon branding as a form of trust so that the mainstream user who knows Amazon, maybe they don't know PayPal as well, goes, oh, well, I buy things on Amazon all the time. That's convenient. I trust that my information will be secure there. Whether they should or not, it's a whole different question.
It's going to have to be a much more sort of calculated plan of attack for people, because if you're using, you know, if you're a small-time sort of retailer, like you said, like an Etsy sort of thing, and your products are unique to your own specific sort of store, well, then, yeah, it's kind of a no-brainer because Amazon is a more recognizable brand than PayPal, to most people, I would think. So that's where you would go. But if it's somewhere where they would potentially compromise your individual sales as a retailer, well, then, you know, you're sort of playing with fire, I think, a little bit.
All right, let's get our drinks ready to pour a little out. For televisions, Panasonic reportedly has told Reuters and the Nikkei Business Daily that they will stop making plasma TVs by March 2014. That pretty much ends plasma as an option. LCD has now won if this ends up happening. They're going to close their plasma screen factory in Amagasaki and put it up for sale. That is a huge, sprawling place, by the way. That's no small feat to shut that down. Now, Panasonic told the BBC nothing has been decided at this stage. So I guess there's still a small sliver of hope for plasma fans that this might not happen. But last year, Panasonic plasma screen division made a loss of 754 billion yen. That followed a 772 billion yen loss the previous year. And President Kazuhiro Tsuga has been weeding out the weak divisions. He only wants high profit margin divisions. The Japanese television business in general has declined. They now consist, after this Panasonic plasma factory closes, of just three LCD plants and a few assembly plants. Japan used to rule televisions. Panasonic will shift their LCD plant from 80% TVs to 80% mobile as well, according to Reuters. And just in general, people are buying fewer televisions. Global TV shipments dropped 6.3% in 2012. It's the first decline in over a decade, according to numbers from IHS iSupply. So, Jeff, I mean, I know we've got Ultra HD or 4K and 3D was a flop, but, you know, they're always trying to find new ways to sell us televisions. But the shift from tube televisions to flat panels, spiked televisions, is that it? Have we seen the last great television replacement wave?
Maybe. I mean, I think what's interesting about the sort of inevitable extinction of plasma is the same thing happened with DLP. And up until the last, you know, DLP that you could buy, I think it was a Toshiba. There are a lot of people that maintain the DLP at a superior picture quality. And what sort of happens is you know, these arguably superior products that have better picture qualities get sort of, you know, elbowed out of the retail space because, and I guess with plasma, you know, obviously they're not making enough money on it, but they're heavier. They're, you know, they're a little more cumbersome than an LCD. So I just find that to be sort of interesting where, you know, the compromise isn't necessarily going to benefit the consumer in terms of the quality of the product. It looks like it's more of just kind of, you know, not necessarily, it's kind of fashion over function, really, when it comes to, you know, what survives the sort of battle royale of products. And to me, that's kind of a setting I've had. And when you talk about, you know, the death of, like, you know, a consistent sort of upgrading, I mean, I've had my plasma for a decade and I have no plans on getting rid of it, considering now it's going to be, you know, like a dinosaur. You know, aside from the fact that it does this really weird buzz whenever it displays white, I'm cool with it. But yeah, it's I guess it's kind of depressing. I want to talk to Katzmeyer more about it.
Yeah, go ahead, IS.
Yeah, so the switch from CRTs to flat screens, the real big shift there was content, right? So if you had a CRT and you started seeing everything in 16:9, you have these bars. People started getting frustrated with that. They're like, I want to have a 16:9 TV. So they go and buy those. But since that's happened, since these plasmas have been out there, LCDs, OLEDs, everything that's out there, there's nothing about the content that's shifted to the point where you need a new TV. Even though 3D content was supposed to be big, ESPN tried having their 3D channel. They closed that down because it just wasn't clicking. So if the content doesn't shift in a way that requires a new TV, although obviously why would they shift content unless you have a new TV? But if that doesn't happen, you have no reason to switch your TV just yet, especially if it's capable of displaying pretty much anything you want at a 1080p signal, resolution. So unless content shifts, there's nothing you can do about this. We're going to have these long-lasting televisions because the old life cycle of TVs was something like 10 years. The idea that you shift it every couple of years was something that the Electronics Association is trying to push. But nobody's thinking, yeah, I'm going to spend, you know, $2,000 every year to get a TV. What do you do with the old ones?
Yeah, I think 4K might bump these numbers back up a little bit because people will want the better picture. And we could see a little bit of what happened with HD. But you don't have the form factor change. And more people are watching television on their tablets and on their laptops. And I think what we're seeing is a decline in the need for a second and third TV in a lot of situations. People say, well, yeah, I obviously want one in the living room. But, you know, in the garage, I can just use my tablet. I don't need to buy a television for the shed, for the workbench, and stuff like that anymore. Let's move on to the randomizer. We had a straw poll today with our live audience, and 66% of them voted for this story from the Daily Mail, the Sony Walkman to the Humble Zip, the past century's top 100 inventions that changed our lives, yet most of us take for granted. It's kind of a silly headline, but it really is a fun story to page three because they have lots of pictures of, you know, for instance, the Epson HX20 laptop or the old Kodak camera, the Instamatic. They have the StarTAC on there. They even have things. They call it the Zip. We would call it the Zipper here in the U.S., but, you know, they go into that kind of technology, too. Do you guys page through this at all? It is kind of fun.
I thought it was cool. The Zippo lighter is on there. I think that's pretty awesome. I mean,
it almost seems like that wouldn't have been invented in the last century. It seems like something that's been around for a few of them.
Yeah. Don't forget the hair dryer, which is just below that zipper. Yeah, there you go. That's something I take for granted every day when I sit in my chair and do that.
What's funny is that those hair dryers really haven't advanced all that much. They don't really look much different today.
If you go to a salon and use one of those, yeah, you're right.
Who thought people would use that? I mean, Google Glass is silly. It's like, no, just sit in this chair. We'll put this over your head. It'll work. But that works. That's fine.
I just noticed 1964 plasma television, University of Illinois. And here we are announcing its demise.
Telefunken mouse.
At the same time. That's so sad. The iPhone's on here. The Kindle Fire's on here. The breathalyzer is on here. It's good stuff. Anyway, check it out. Dailymail.co.uk. We'll have the link in the show notes. Let's check what's on the calendar.
Well, there's one little thing happening tomorrow, and that is the Samsung Galaxy Note 10.1 tablet, the 2014 edition, is getting its U.S. release date. Hooray!
And onward to the email.
Incoming message.
Yeah, that Nest Protect got a lot of emails, a lot of reactions. We got an email from Chip from Boston who says the Nest kind of buried the lead with the Protect. The best feature is the motion sensor because when he uses his Nest thermometer as well, the thermometer thinks he's away because it's in a further away location.
The
Protect,
right?
Will talk to the thermostat, correct, and tell the thermostat he's still there to keep the heat on. Tom from New Mexico said he does not want a calming female voice saying, "Wake up, sweetheart, the house may be on fire." He wants a Nest to have a marine drill instructor voice mode that says, "Wake up, maggot, your house is on fire. Get out of bed now, move it, move it, move it." So
that'll be 2.0. You can customize that voice to your own personal satisfaction.
Also, he wishes it was cheaper. A lot of people want the Protect to be a lot cheaper.
There we go. Yeah, I agree.
Another email from Scott in London. He says, "I'm not sure why you think that just because Pandora isn't in the UK, that there's no competition for iTunes Radio in the UK. We might not have Pandora, but we do have plenty of streaming services such as Spotify, Blinkbox," I hadn't heard of that one before, "Google Music, Bloom.fm, and Last.fm. They still stream in the UK and probably a few others that I'm forgetting, Napster, for example. Also, if you're looking for a non-personalized radio experience, then there's always radioplayer.co.uk, which streams most of the UK's radio stations online. So we're well served for streaming radio." Scott, I would argue that some of those services are streaming, not so much the online radio model that Pandora and iTunes Radio use, although Spotify and certainly RDO in the U.S. have both introduced radio-like functionality. But yes, I get your point. You have options.
Yeah, I would have. You were nicer. I would have phrased it. I'm not sure why you think those services are the same as Pandora, Scott, but they don't operate in the same way. But see, I would just use his language to get back from. But yeah, I don't think I don't think we were forgetting that those services exist. I think we were saying there's not a very Pandora-like competitor in the UK that we're aware of. Of the ones you mentioned, they don't seem to be Pandora-like. But maybe there is another one out there that we're not aware of. So by all means, email us and let us know. Thank you, Jeff Bacalar, for joining us. Of course, you can find him at the 404.cnet.com, the longest-running podcast on CNET.
Is it the longest-running?
Well, I don't think you've got the most episodes yet, but you're the survivor, right?
What?
There's no other current podcasts that started before the 404.
Correct. So I'll be expecting our trophy to come in the mail.
It's on its way.
How many episodes did BOL do?
You know what? That's a good question. Like that, because that's obviously. I'll research that for you. You got
1588.
1588. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're like we're about 200 away from that. We're gonna do one more and then stop. and then just call it quits and hang up the mics. And just be like, drop the mic and be like, that's it.
Good night. You got your last show where we loved the show more.
Yeah, just a little bit more.
Obviously.
Excellent.
Anything else going on to let folks know about at CNET before we let you go, Jeff?
Yeah, there's obviously the next generation console coverage is going to be out of control. We're doing a lot of stuff with GameSpot in that regard. And myself and the rest of my 404 crew, we're working on something a little special with a new space we've got in New York here. So keep it here. We'll start leaking out some stuff as it gets built, and it'll be fun.
Wait for Jeff and Justin to get leaky. It'll be good stuff.
Oh, yeah. All kinds of leakage.
All right. Thanks, man. Don't forget about our subreddit, folks, technewstoday.reddit.com, where you can go and have an effect on what stories we cover. Get in there and vote. Vote stuff up. Vote stuff down. If you see stuff, you're like, wait a minute, that story's not very interesting, or that's old, or it's inaccurate, the headline's misleading, whatever. Vote it up, vote it down, technewstoday.reddit.com. Also, we never mentioned this, but we have a YouTube channel that you can subscribe to as well at youtube.com/technewstoday. So if you're the YouTube inclined, you can go watch the show that way as well. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. Email us, TNT@twit.tv, and give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back tomorrow with Eric Olander returning as our guest. Good to see him, and we'll see you then.